Hi, this is Dr. Jay Davidson with drjdavidson.com. Welcome to another interview of the Mitochondrial Summit. I have a special guest with me, Dr. Daniel Newsom, and he's going to be talking about mitochondria, a symbiotic relationship that we have with the bugs in our body. So, Dr. Newsom, welcome to the summit.
Thank you so much.
A little background on him. He's got, seven doctorate degrees?
Yes.
One for each day of the week?
Each day of the week. That's why I went bald, you know. Just stuffed this whole full of stuff, you know.
So I'm really excited to be interviewing Dr. Newsom. Very knowledgeable, obviously. I don't know of another doctor that has seven doctorates. But let's dive into it. So, I mean, you want to talk about the symbiotic bugs in our body.
Right. So we have, in the human body, okay, we have two sets of bugs, okay, microbes, they're bacteria, fungal, you know, cells and things like that that live within our body, okay. One set eats sugar, and therefore they're called anaerobic, okay. The other set breathes oxygen, and they're called aerobic, okay. There's one particular type of bug that is in every cell in our body, and there's some cells that only have one of these bugs. There's other cells like our brain cells and our liver cells and our heart cells that could have up to 2,000 of these bugs in each cell, okay? And that bug, this bacteria, is mitochondria, okay? The mitochondria in our cell is a bug. It's a bacteria. And we inherit them from our mothers, right? But they inherited them from their mothers and their mothers all the way back. And these are present in the cells of every living thing on the planet. So everything from other bugs to animals or the tree out back, or, you know, the herbs in your garden, or you and I, you know. All living things have mitochondria in them. And what mitochondria do is they generate the energy for the cell to do whatever job it's supposed to do.
Okay.
So the thing about mitochondria, the mitochondria breathe oxygen. Okay, so they're some of those aerobic microbes, right?
Yep.
So these mitochondria breathe oxygen just like we do, okay? They metabolize oxygen very similar to the way the rest of our body does. And just like in our body, when we metabolize oxygen, we have byproducts that we call free radicals, okay? And those free radicals cause oxidation to whatever they bump up against, you know, whatever they connect to. Oxidation in the human body, we call that oxidation. In your car, we call that rust.
Okay.
And so what free radicals do is they cause different tissues and cells and things in our body to degenerate. Well, free radicals, when they're produced in these oxygen-breathing mitochondria, also degenerate the mitochondria. That's what brings them to their death, basically.
Okay.
I use the analogy with patients. Mitochondria is kind of like a wood stove. And you put wood in it, you burn wood in it, okay? And if you never clean it out or detoxify it, eventually you're not going to be able to burn anything in that stove. It's going to be full of ash.
Right.
You know? And so in the mitochondria, ash is kind of the free radicals that build up in them.
So essentially, we have the things that produce energy in our body, amongst other things that the mitochondria do, are actually bacteria that are symbiotic to the body. So it's not even our own human cells.
No, they're not human. There's there are human mitochondria, okay, that you'll find in all humans. You also find different ones in animals or trees, okay? But they're all very similar.
Okay.
One of the big differences is the color is different per species. Slightly different per species is one of the differences. Other differences, but it's kind of cool, you know? So in a person, it's one color. In a tree, it's a different color.
Okay.
You know? But the bug in and of itself is very, very similar. They're definitely the same family, you know?
So backing up just a step, you had said that we get our mitochondria from our moms.
Right.
So is it safe to say, because you've always heard, well, egg and sperm come together, you get DNA from dad, you get DNA from mom.
Right.
Is there a third DNA then of mitochondria that you're getting from mom in addition?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. So as you acquire nutrition and everything from mom, your cells also, in order to operate, need mitochondria. That's one of, it's not a nutrient, but it's one of the components that you get as you're forming in the womb. You're getting these mitochondria.
That's so awesome. So you get mom's genes, you get dad's genes, and then you're going to get mitochondria genes from mom, which are bugs.
Bugs.
So then my other thought starts thinking about, okay, if we have these symbiotic bugs that are the powerhouses to our cells and amongst, again, all these other things that they can do, well, this whole paradigm, especially in the medical world of antibiotics,
right.
Thinking, wait a minute, killing bugs.
Right.
What's your thoughts on antibiotics and mitochondria?
It's horrible, first off.
Okay.
But number one, just it's bad. There's a problem with especially chronic infections. See, I'm not opposed to antibiotic therapy in a acute situation. You know, at least they will save a life. Sometimes the infection's raging so far past what the immune system can contain, you have to use an antibiotic to settle the situation down.
Okay.
That's one thing. Chronic consumption of antibiotics, pesticide-laden food. Okay, here's a question. What's the difference between a pesticide and an antibiotic?
I mean, they seem very similar when you ask that question that way.
Right. Isn't that crazy? So a pesticide kills what?
Bugs.
Yeah. An antibiotic kills what?
Bugs.
And so they both do the same thing. So when we're consuming pesticide-laden food, I mean, we're getting small doses of antibiotic. Okay. And this causes damage not just in our gut, but as that once it's caused the damage in the gut, there's more damage that will happen as these toxins penetrate our body deeper and deeper and deeper. And one of the areas that they're going to cause problems is in our mitochondria.
Okay.
Okay. So we got herbicides, pesticides, and antibiotics. And then we also have preservatives and food. Okay, these are all things that are consistent. And antibiotics aren't always consistent, but some people have had, I've had patients who were on antibiotics 20 out of 30 days a month for 30 years. To try to rebuild those systems is pushing a 500-pound rock uphill. It's very difficult, very, very difficult, because so much has been killed. Okay, here's the thing, is what I teach to patients, is the human body is a culmination of three different things. We got water with the periodic table floating in it that's acted on by bugs.
Okay.
Okay, very simply, if you take biochemistry, what are we talking about? We've got water, right? This the human body's 70% water. Well, what's in the water and what configures the water are different components from the periodic table. But then what acts on those components and creates the enzymes and things that we need in order to carry out our bodily functions are microbes. And so when we have a bad mix, okay, here's my problem with antibiotic therapy long term, is when you get into the rut of killing the bugs,
mm-hmm.
you'll die before they do. Problem with this is if you have a chronic infection, it's because you have the right environment in your body to grow that infection.
Including stress, toxins, etc.
Right, right. All these different factors come together. I use this example with patients also, that if we took a 5-gallon bucket, sterilized it, filled it with distilled water, right? There's nothing in distilled water, yep. right? And we take and we put it out by the curbside in some busy road, leave it there for 6 weeks. Would that water be drinkable in 6 weeks?
No.
No, of course not, because water is adhesive, right? So it sticks to things and things stick to it, right? So that water sitting in that bucket, even though it started out pure, 6 weeks later would have accumulated everything that was in the environment. Our body's 70% water, by the way.
Meaning we're accumulating what's in our environment.
What's in our environment. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
If we're not doing something to help our filters, our liver, our kidneys, our lymphatic system, right, to deal with our environment, all of that accumulates. And then the water, quote unquote, that our cells are floating in our body becomes dirty. When that happens, we start getting all kinds of morphologies. Okay, things start to adapt to that dirty environment. And we get things like MTHFR. We get other genetic mutations, right? All that is the genetics responding to the dirty environment that they're floating around in. Okay, and if that has happened, if those are things that you're dealing with, then gene therapy isn't the way to go. The way to go is to clean up that environment.
Environment. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
You know, fix that environment, and the body will adapt accordingly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I dove into the genomics world for a couple of years, because it's like, wow, how cool is this?
Sure.
We can look at, you know, I was joking, the MTHFR, the mother effer gene. But
first thing that came across my desk, I'm like, oh, come on. They're now diagnosing people like that with
Yes, yeah. But it's actually, you know, what's interesting with the MTHFR, it's more common to actually have abnormalities in it than actually to be normal.
Correct.
So you have to, yeah, it always kind of makes you reframe it. But when you look at the body and the microbiome is becoming more like cherished,
right.
if you will,
right.
and how certain bugs will flip genes on or off,
right.
or help activate vitamins, B12,
right.
or these different things. So at what point do you feel, are we on that cusp science-wise of kind of going to start looking at mitochondria in a similar way?
I think so. I think that mitochondria, as we move forward in science, I think mitochondria is going to have a much bigger emphasis,
okay.
even in medicine. You know, there are cancer drugs that are specific for killing mitochondria. There are chemo drugs that kill mitochondria. When you take a step back and look at why cancer occurs, it's because the environment in the body is so low in oxygen that we can't supply the mitochondria with enough oxygen to keep things operating properly. Therefore, things go down a really bad path and we start growing tumors. So to go back and kill mitochondria can't, in the long run, save you.
No. No, it's my mind, I'm like, wait a minute, they're missing the boat.
Okay.
Instead of clearing the environment...
Right.
To get the mitochondria healthy.
Healthy again. Right.
They're just kind of trying to prolong or manage.
Reduce the tumor. That's not always the best thing to do.
Okay. Wow.
You know, it's really interesting. Just the different therapies that are out there. And there are specific mitochondria killing drugs. And from our standpoint, with our understanding of how the body operates and how, you know, that oxygen metabolism, if it's healthy, is life-sustaining and everything gets built up and you get better and better and better, right? If that oxygen metabolism's off, then things start to oxidize and deteriorate, they rust, you know? But mitochondria are where we respirate on a cellular level. Okay, so I, as a human being, breathe through my respiratory system, but on a cellular level, I breathe through my mitochondria. They're the ones that metabolize the oxygen on a cellular level. And if that gets off, that affects everything else. Here's just for example, the human body is 65% oxygen.
That's a big number.
It's a big number, right. So we're 65% oxygen. We're 11.5% hydrogen. And we're 18.5% carbon.
Yeah, I was going to say carbon, hydrogen, oxygen.
Exactly.
Primarily.
Primarily. We got about 4% is the entire rest of the periodic table, including nitrogen, which is a big, it's about 1.7% of our body.
So then the rest of the minerals kind of get the little
get
scraps.
Exactly. Okay. Right, right. So if your body is 65% oxygen, what happens when you get oxygen deficient?
Well, clearly it's not going to function optimally.
Mm-hmm.
And especially as you're explaining, mitochondria aerobic, meaning they respirate.
Respirate, absolutely. They breathe oxygen. They have to have that oxygen in order to operate.
So looking at some of the major diseases like cancer,
right,
or heart disease, I mean, cancer, I've so often heard, it's anaerobic. It's
right,
basically utilizing glucose.
Right, sure.
So if you can shift the cells from glucose to
oxygen,
mm-hmm, is that essentially restoring the body to natural,
yes,
function?
It's bringing it back into that good range. So instead of the oxygen deteriorating everything, the body starts using the oxygen properly, and it breathes properly. If your oxygen levels in your body drop, that's kind of like, for the mitochondria, it's kind of like putting them underwater.
Okay.
Put one of us underwater, you know. If we don't have an oxygen tank, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, we can't stay down there very long. And so when people are chronically low oxygen levels in their body, that starts to happen, and the mitochondria start to die off because they can't breathe.
Looking at the medication side, because a few years ago when I really started diving into the mitochondria topic and reading different books, like I remember reading Dr. Horowitz, big, you know,
right,
Lyme disease guy, and he
right,
kind of had just a sentence, but it stood out to me, that cholestyramine, which is
mm-hmm,
known to be a mold binding thing, sort of,
right,
like cholesterol binding, but, you know, used in the mold world, damages mitochondria. I'm like,
right,
how does that in the long run seem good?
How's that really going to be helpful?
Are there certain medications that stand out to you that do that, or are a lot of medications in general?
A lot of medications in general,
okay,
are doing that. I don't necessarily think it's by design. There are a lot of them. It's just a side effect. You know?
Okay.
Have you ever met a patient that was on 10 medications that had too much energy?
No, I mean, it's chronic fatigue,
right,
constipation. I mean,
right, right.
All
everything
meds
slowed down.
Yeah,
you know, all of their metabolic processes have slowed down.
Yes,
and therefore they feel terrible. And again, when the metabolic processes slow down, guess what? That includes their liver, their kidneys, their lymphatic system. Remember the water we talked about? Well, everything backs up in the water, and it gets real muddy. I joke that there's only two types of chronically ill patients. There are those whose water is too muddy, and those whose mud is too watery. So, what I mean, okay, if their water is too muddy, they're toxic.
Yeah.
Okay. If their mud is too watery, they're swollen. They're inflamed. Okay. And that's what we see.
Yeah.
We have these chronically ill people that have been sick for 10, 20. I've had patients sick for 35 years. It's terrible. Well, by the time their tissues have been swollen for 35 years, it's hard for them to regain any integrity in those tissues. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because they've been stretched and swollen for so long. Getting that to dry up again, it's a battle. It can happen. Definitely happens. But it takes time. It takes work. They have to be real diligent, you know?
So clinically then, I mean, putting the topic of mitochondria top of the list, meaning clearly it's important.
Right.
What do you do clinically as a doctor working with a client or
sure,
patient?
Sure. The first approach really is to start cleaning up the environment. You know, inside the cell, in the intracellular space, that's where the mitochondria are. Okay, so if this the extracellular space, the space around the cell, if that's dirty, it starts to contaminate the cell. Inside, right? And so if everything around the cell is dirty,
the cell inside is going
to
become dirty.
It starts to accumulate that, right?
Okay.
That then starts to choke off the mitochondria. And so we got to fix that first. We got to get the drainage system in the body operating. You know, everything has to be moving. you unplug the drain in the body from the bottom up, no pun intended. And so things have to be moving, have to be flowing. As that happens, we have to increase nutrition. Okay, so we're going to get drainage occurring in the body. Then we have to start introducing things so the body can start rebuilding itself. Once the water in the body has been well cleaned up,
mm-hmm.
You can start flooding the system with nutrients, and the body will receive it, and it will start to heal. It'll start to fix itself. It just needs the nuts and bolts. You know, if we don't give it raw material to fix itself, it can't pull it out of thin air, you know.
So what are those raw bolts? Because I'm thinking, again, the oxygen, hydrogen, carbon comments.
Right. In for me, clinically, I go back to, I've been using Fulvix and Humix for upwards of 20 years.
Wow.
And I've never found anything that outperforms them from a nutrient delivery standpoint.
Okay.
They just work. You know, here's what's interesting. Your mitochondria are actually very similar to a lot of soil microorganisms. Okay. Soil microorganisms respond to Fulvix and Humix incredibly. Okay, if you have a tree or you have a piece of grass in your a spot in your yard that's grass has been burnt or whatnot, Humix and Fulvix will stimulate the soil microorganisms in the soil there, and they will cause massive growth of the grass in your backyard. You know what I'm saying?
Meaning Fulvix could be a good thing for farmers.
Absolutely.
And those that garden.
Absolutely. Totally.
Okay.
Absolutely. But remember, I use the example that the human body is water, the periodic table, water with the periodic table floating in it, right?
Yep.
Acted on by
microbes.
Okay. So Fulvix structures the water in our body, okay, making it more, water should be a liquid crystalline substance in our system. Fulvix takes it to that state.
Okay.
Which is super important. If you do that, what happens is the toxins that are floating around the water start to fall out and are easier to move on downstream, right? Number two, Fulvix reorganize the periodic table in our body.
Okay,
meaning, let's say you have high aluminum. Well, it starts pulling aluminum out and putting magnesium in its spot. Okay, if you have high mercury, it starts pulling mercury out and putting zinc in where the mercury was. You know, lead and calcium and all these different elements, it starts to reorganize those elements. So the longer you take it, the more organized your periodic table becomes.
Meaning that deficiencies will disappear. And excesses will minimize back to, okay.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. Number three, Fulvix is a very high oxygen compound. So it has molecular oxygen in it. So it's something that it holds oxygen in I equate it to an oxygen tank, you know. And so it holds oxygen. In not only is it delivering minerals and vitamins and all these other things, it's also delivering oxygen to the cells and tissues of our body.
Okay.
Hence, why I would use that for enhancing the mitochondria.
It's almost like the building blocks of the body then.
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So it can be essentially a multivitamin, multimineral.
Right.
But also deliver the bricks that lay the foundation for the body.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've used it clinically for years and years and years. Personally, in my own family, okay, my children consume folic on a daily basis.
Okay.
I do. My wife does. When we do any type of